Your cans.
Cans.
My cans.
My cans can.
They're free today.
Mine too.
I refuse.
I am braless.
I couldn't do it.
We are, by the way, coming into this show, starting with you saying, my cans.
My cans.
That's how we started.
Into good. It. We Welcome. Are all braless today.
Yeah.
We are.
Randall, I think,
it
is braless.
It is braless Sunday.
It's the Lord's Day.
We are all braless.
Tis.
Just free.
The day of
I
our
did not
free
say Scottish dudes aren't hot. I said
have you
that
seen
the
Scottish
ones
dudes?
That I have seen in person in Scotland were not hot.
That still implies you were in Scotland surrounded by Scottish men.
I understand that, which is why I'm surprised to say that, but there were not many. I will actually, okay, I'm going to rescind that statement because... Mm-hmm. Now that I think about it, the hottest dude that John and I both saw at the same time was a barista in Stirling, Scotland.
Ooh.
There you go.
If so, you're listening, guy.
Don't ask guy. Me what episode that was.
Black,
I don't remember.
Black hair and muscly.
Ooh.
You know who you are.
I bet he does.
Yeah. You don't have to reach out. I'm not asking you to do that, but just know.
I am.
Not.
If he's straight, yeah, go for it.
I don't know who this man is.
He's... Oh. Little on the shorter side, but black, yeah. Like jet black hair, in the shorter but long kind of
okay,
poofier
yeah.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Poofier.
Poofier.
Picking it up.
And then muscly without a ton of definition.
Okay.
Yes.
Lean,
not necessarily like, I don't know that he has a six pack, but he is trim enough to.
Nice.
To
okay,
be
yeah.
in that area.
I like that. I like that.
Somewhere in Stirling, Scotland.
Somewhere in Stirling, Scotland. He's a barista.
Fair.
He's like
or was.
A 15-minute walk from a hilltop cemetery.
Maybe he was a ghost. Just a real hot ghost barista. He's like.
I just go back and ask him. He's never been here.
There hasn't been a barista like that here in 45 years. Just a little nod to my girlfriend Karen Kilgariff on this episode. God, that would be really, really funny though, because someday we're gonna tour there. We'll just go there for fun, take Jesus a couple Christ. Days off of touring, go to Stirling, and look for the ghost barista.
Into it,
hot ghost barista.
Into it.
Also, welcome to Ghosts and Hoes, the Patreon edition.
Welcome to Ghosts and Hoes.
Yeah.
I really like your pants today.
Thank you.
They're very fitting.
They're themed because today, oh bless, today this episode's a biggin.
We got a biggin.
It's a goodin too.
It's a goodin. Oh. It's a goodin and a biggin.
It's such a thing.
It is a thing.
Truly, just. Hateful. I almost hate this guy as much as H.H. Holmes.
Oh, because he's an exhausting bastard? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell me.
Yeah.
Shit.
I have to imagine that when you guys are writing these, you're both doing basically all of the same research, but you just have to pick it apart differently?
Probably, yeah.
Right? Like, I feel like you have read all of the things that she's about to tell us.
For me, for this episode specifically, I feel like I didn't even touch
her
what
part.
She was doing.
Okay.
So I just ignored anything that had anything to do with that
okay.
part. But so today, just so you're finally all on the same page as the three of us, because cryptic, which is fitting.
But they've probably already read what
the description?
Yes.
Yeah. But still, some people don't.
Some people don't.
Some people just like play next.
And see, those people Fair. Are hearing us say that now, and they are actively going to look at it as a spiteful fuck you.
Or they're like, that's
I'm
me.
I'm going to read the description. I'm going to read it now.
I resemble that. Yes, I do that. But yeah, today we're going to take a look into the crimes of one of America's most terrifying serial killers. The motherfucking Zodiac Killer.
Pow, 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 pow.
I could get it on my phone. I just don't want to move. It's right there.
It's
right there.
It's, yeah, fair.
The moment is past.
Fuck you. Fuck you, guys. That moment never passes.
The time and place for the horn is always. Much like Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
Oh, God damn it.
The time and place for the hype horn is always.
Yeah. The hype horn.
I don't know if that's what it's called, but that's the only
one. It is now.
That's the best description for it, I think.
Fucking is now.
Yeah, I did it. That was me. You're welcome.
Fucking hype horn.
If that's not what it's called, yes, it is now. But yeah, this fucking guy.
This fucking guy.
Fucking twat.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. So since his identity is unknown to this day, we're just going to jump right into his reign of terror and, of course, talk about suspects and theories. There's a lot of speculation about this case, which makes all of the sense because it's so fucking mysterious.
Yeah.
So to start, I'll be covering Zodiac's confirmed murders and onto the cases that are believed to be done by the Zodiac. But just keep in mind that I will be jumping around time-wise on occasion.
Yes.
So I'll try and make it as straightforward as possible. But we all might get lost a little bit. So get out, like,
get your thumbtacks.
Get thumbtacks. Get
your red thread.
String,
yeah.
Get
go.
Some paper. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
And to make this about me for just a sec,
please
I will not be very present for this episode.
No, we got a lot going on.
Yeah,
today.
A lot of last minute schedule changes happened. So
surprises.
Yeah, surprises are, you know, they're a thing.
Yeah, not my favorite thing.
So
for me,
I have to go start doing that stuff.
Go do it.
Go do that stuff
again.
Yeah.
Stop button.
Okay.
It's easy to find.
Okay.
I got my glasses on. So
sure, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
I was readjusting.
Somehow, some way.
Just hearing you do that while looking away. I picture D dry heaving.
Oh, God.
No. That was me just moving.
Readjusting.
Moving my body. Because it's apparently.
No, not you dry heaving. Sorry.
Difficult.
Sweet D from It's Always Sunny.
Oh.
That's the funniest fucking thing.
Anyway, I love
it. Sorry.
She does
continue.
That.
It's a long one.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know how long yours is. Mine is long.
Let's
go. Strap in, motherfuckers. Let's talk
Buckle
about goddamn
the fuck up.
Zodiac killer. This fucking turd.
This fucking guy.
This fucking guy. But she was talking about my pants earlier because I do have leggings that have the cipher on them.
I will now take a photo and then it will go on the Instagram.
It's very
when
official.
We
also my hat.
Got it all. Yeah, bitch. Got it.
I like I said before, I understood the assignment. Because I created the assignment.
Yeah. And it's Brawless Sunday.
Yeah.
Here for it. Here for all of it.
Gimme.
Let's do this.
Free them. Free them titties.
Free them tatties.
Get them out there. Before we start, because this is awful, and freeing everybody's titties, I went to a wedding on Friday.
Oh.
Which means I went to work hungover on Saturday.
Oh.
It was okay. My coworker got there at like 9. I'd been there since 6:45, because I was early. And I had two of my Starbucks tumblers.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, okay, but why? Why are there two? I'm like, well, you see, one is my ice water. And this one is what is now my second Diet Pepsi of the morning.
Yes, your Diet Peeps.
My Diet Peeps. It was a necessity.
Yeah.
Had I the time to have stopped at like McDonald's beforehand to get one of their magical fountain Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
Yes. There was no time. But it helped. It fixed me. She was like, do you want to take a class? Because I work at a gym. I was like, no.
Absolutely not.
I would rather die. Honestly.
Yeah. You'd sweat it out, though, but
I did.
You'd have to feel like you're going to die first.
Yeah, it was not fun. But that, the wedding, I'll show you photos. I have not posted them yet, but I wore this jumpsuit
Ooh.
To my friend's wedding that has a keyhole opening situation.
Ooh, titties.
In the front. They were, and it was like, me and my titties are out this evening.
Ooh, nice.
It
pretty
was
titties.
Nice. It was
pretty
good.
Titty suit.
I tried to wear one of those, like the sticky
Yeah, fuck
bra
them.
Thing?
You don't need
well,
that.
Well, no,
though.
What it does is like it just sticky and then it hikes them up.
Yeah.
And makes them like extra cleavagey. Which
okay.
I mean, but it wasn't working. So I
Fair.
Just. And it was new. So the adhesive was.
Oh, no.
Rude.
I
was like, oh, no.
Took off a layer of skin.
Almost.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used carpet tape to put pasties on before.
Oh, okay.
And this was worse.
Oh.
This was worse.
Oh, full body wax.
Almost. But thankfully, they have like a little pocket above, like where your nip noops go. So it was mostly just the skin around my nurples that got assaulted by tape.
Interessante.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, that's, I like the design of this. I just wish it actually worked.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
It was one of those dumb, like, here it is on Amazon for like $6.
Yep.
Random sticky bra that you've seen all over the internet. I'm like, oh, I'll try it.
Rando shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Titty corner.
Titty corner. You're welcome. And now it's time to get into everything that is terrible and horrifying. So,
and not our titties.
Not those. If you ever need a moment during this, just push pause and just remember, nobody's wearing a bra today. Just be like, I'm so scared. Just wait. Everybody's got free boobies on this.
Freedom.
Just free falling tatties.
Yep.
Just... there's no wind, so they're not swanging. They're just out.
Yep.
I think my shirt might be see-through, too.
Nice.
I don't know.
Well, it's black. But, I mean, I can't see through it.
Yeah, but also...
but in the sunlight, it might be.
Yeah, but also, I was like, I don't care.
Could be a sweet surprise.
Yeah, you're welcome to everybody at the Valvoline that I have to go to after work, after this, and the store. You're welcome. Yeah, because mysteriously, my car, which was also super fun and not at all stressful, my car's like... you're at 15% oil life. I'm like, I just had my oil changed. I've still got like 2,000 miles. What are you talking
about?
What'd
they do?
I don't know. I haven't gone in yet. I have to go after.
Okay.
And then also after recording last week, I came out and there was a crack in my windshield.
Lame. I have a nail in my tire. Right? So, Schwab, yeah.
Must you?
Fixed my
That's good.
Flat. Well, because the tire pressure kept going up and down. But I need two new front tires, so I think that's what I am doing tomorrow.
I
already knew was coming because Mr. Mitchell told me so.
Yeah.
When I first bought my car, he's like, you're going to need new front tires within the year. He was correct.
Man.
I know.
He knows about tires.
He knows about tires.
Ugh. Hang on. I have an itch, and it's really rude.
Okay. I feel like we're procrastinating.
We
right
are, because it's a hate. Guys. This has taken so long. I had, to be honest, I have not even chosen a story for tomorrow.
Yeah.
I know.
Gotcha. So, I get it. Patreons, man. It.
Oh, it wasn't.
Takes
bad.
A lot of
I was just
fucking
like,
time.
This one. There was so much stuff I had to research.
No,
I was just like, and I have been working on it for like 2 weeks. I think.
Yeah. No. Fair. I get it.
Yeah, and then they keep trying to screw my schedule around at work, and I'm like, guys, you can't do this. My body physically can't take it when you change like that, because I have chronic insomnia.
Right.
And when you don't give me 2 days off in a row at least, my body is like, oh, we're off. We're going to stay awake forever now. I'm like, no.
Bummer.
So this week has been absolute trash.
Fair.
Absolute trash.
Lame.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's do this. Here we go.
I fucking hate this guy. All right. And this is, I'm starting with confirmed cases.
Yes.
But there will be some jumping around.
Jumping.
But I will tell you beforehand so you can maybe pause.
Some jumping jumps.
Write down some notes. So, December 20th, 1968. Just before Christmas, David Arthur Faraday, 17, and Betty Lou Jensen, 16, were heading out on a date. They had planned on going to a Christmas concert at the high school near Betty Lou's house, and they promised her parents that she'd be home no later than 11 o'clock. Instead, they went to visit a mutual friend and got some food. Later on, motorists that had driven by the Lover's Lane on Lake Herman Road in Benicia would report seeing Faraday's station wagon parked at the gravel turnout just after 11 o'clock. A few minutes later, Stella Borges, who lived nearby, discovered their bodies. Police arrived on the scene and found the young couple, and it was not good. It was not good.
No.
Betty Lou had been shot in the back 5 times, killing her instantly. Looked like she had tried to run, but was gunned down during her escape. Her body was found 28 feet from the car. David was next to the car, still breathing. But he had been shot in the head at point-blank range and died shortly after the police arrived. Bullet holes were found in the back window and roof of the car, leading investigators to initially believe that the murderer had shot into the car as a warning to the teens. The shell casings found at the scene belonged to a Winchester Western Super X, which tuck that away for later. and later ballistics tests indicated that the gun used to kill David and Betty Lou was a .22, potentially a J.C. Higgins Model 80 semi-automatic pistol, which sounds really fucking intense.
Mm-hmm.
The Solano County Sheriff's Department investigated the crime and assumed the teens had been the victims of a random attack, but there were no leads as to who could have committed it. Police looked into Betty Lou's ex-boyfriend as a potential suspect, but that road led nowhere. Betty Lou's best friends would go on to tell San Francisco Weekly that all the detectives thought it had to be because of drugs. They refused to hear anything else, which is really weird.
That is really weird.
Yeah, like...
why?
Right? Like, why would you... like, maybe... I don't know if they thought, like, the kids were involved, Betty Lou and David, or if it was, like, maybe just some fucking... people looking for drugs that decided to shoot children. I don't know. But she was like, yeah, that's all. They would not listen to anything else. It's really, really weird.
Oh, it's 1968.
Drugs are bad! Yeah. Oh, weed dealer. Okay, 1968 weed, I feel like, is probably a lot of stems.
The devil's lettuce! Yeah.
I do enjoy the devil's lettuce. I'm not gonna lie. But yeah, super weird. I'm like, right. Well, that's insane.
Right.
So, Robert Graysmith, a cartoonist for the San Francisco Chronicle, a political cartoonist, initially, he took an interest in the case and started doing his own research on the side. And after reviewing some of the case evidence, he theorized that a second car had pulled alongside Dave and Betty Lou's car on the gravel turnout around 11 p.m., with the mystery driver getting out of the car and possibly ordering the teens out of the station wagon. They then shot David in the head when he was about halfway out of the car and then turned their attention to Betty Lou, who was gunned down as she ran. After that, the killer got back into the car and drove off.
Mm-hmm.
July 4th, 1969, almost 7 months later, the mystery killer would strike again. This time, victims would be Michael Mageau, 19, and Darlene Farron, 22. Darlene was a wife, mother, and well-liked waitress at a local restaurant. She picked up her friend Mike, and the pair went for a drive. They'd pulled into the Blue Rock Springs Park parking lot in Vallejo, which was only about 4 miles from the spot where David and Betty Lou had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
While they were parked, a car pulled up next to them in the lot, but almost immediately took off again. About 10 minutes later, the car returned and parked behind them, but this time the driver got out and approached the couple. He walked up to the passenger side of the car and blinded the couple with a flashlight before firing into the car with a 9mm pistol. They fired 5 shots into the car, with some of the bullets going through Mike's body into Darlene's.
Ooh!
The killer then walked away, but after hearing Mageau moaning, he turned around and shot both of them 2 more times before leaving. At 12:40 a.m. on July 5th, the Vallejo Police Department received a phone call from a man admitting to the shooting. The police were able to trace the call to a phone booth at a gas station that was less than a mile away from Darlene's house and mere blocks from the Vallejo Police Department.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. According to the dispatcher that took the call, the man had a monotone voice and said, "I want to report a murder. If you will go 1 mile east on Columbus Parkway, you'll find kids in a brown car. They were shot with a 9mm Luger." Before hanging up, the man also confessed to the killings of Daniel Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen, saying, "I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye."
Fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, ooh. So Darlene and Mike were rushed to the hospital, but Darlene was pronounced dead on arrival. Mike Mageau survived the attack, having been shot in the face, neck, and chest.
Wow.
Yeah. Some say, like, jaw, shoulder, and I'm like, okay, well, it's the same basic. He was shot in the face.
Yeah, that's where your jaw is.
Yeah. I'm like, guys, his face.
It's connected.
It's terrifying enough as it is.
Yeah.
And he was eventually able to provide a description of his attacker to the police.
Mm-hmm.
According to Mageau, the killer was a white man with light brown, short, curly hair, probably around 5'8", 195 to 200 or more pounds, and between 26 to 30 years old. Mageau would positively identify a suspect in the early 90s, but I will leave that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene... because I just watched Zodiac the first time recently. And that scene at the very beginning is of Mike Mageau and Darlene getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I knew what was coming, but it still made me jump anyway.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
To my dogs in my bed. They're like, why? Like, it's just.
Well, and it that whole scene in the movie is just so incredibly well done with the music.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking hurdy-gurdy man. Oh, my God. Like, it just, it's fucking bone-chilling. It's so goddamn good.
It's such a good movie. If you haven't seen it, go watch it after listening. Or if you have seen it, go watch it again. It's really good. Uh-huh. Fucking David Fincher, man. He knows how to make a movie.
Uh-huh.
Seven.
Uh-huh.
Same guy.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, I forgot how much I like his movies.
Uh-huh.
Also, full of hotness. Like, just...
Fair.
Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr., fucking...
Ruffalo.
Thank you. Yep. I was like, just the Hulk was the only thing coming to mind.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Hot, hot, hot.
Yeah.
And also, it's amazing. Anyway, this is going to, we're going to get into the first letters because that was something he was known for.
Mm-hmm.
So, July 31st, 1969, at the end of July, though some accounts cite it as August 1st, it's 24 hours. It doesn't matter. The San Francisco Examiner, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the Vallejo Times-Herald each received a letter from someone claiming to be responsible for both the Lake Herman Road and the Blue Rock Springs shootings. There was also a 408-character cryptogram inside each of the letters, each one having minor differences, which the author claimed contained his identity. In each letter, the alleged murderer demanded that the papers publish his letters on the front page or he would, and this is a quote, cruise around all weekend killing lone people in the night, then move on to kill again until I end up with a dozen people over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I included all of his misspellings because they are rampant. The Chronicle published their third of the cryptogram the next day on page 4. Vallejo Police Chief Jack E. Stiltz was quoted in the accompanying article saying saying, we're not satisfied that the letter was written by the murderer, and requested that the killer send in another letter to provide details that would verify mm-hmm. the responsibility for the murders. August 7th, 1969, San Francisco Examiner received a letter with the greeting, Dear Editor, this is the Zodiac speaking, marking the first time the now infamous moniker was used. The second letter was in direct response to Chief Stiltz's request for more information, which Zodiac seemed more than happy to supply.
Mm.
In this letter, he shared details from both the Lake Herman Road and Blue Rock Springs murders that hadn't been made public. He also wrote that if the police solved his cipher, quote-unquote, they will have me. The letter was also signed with the now infamous symbol that seems to resemble the crosshairs of a rifle sight. The following day, Donald and Betty Hardin reached out and let the police know that they'd managed to crack a majority of the Zodiac cipher. According to the couple, it read, and this is the whole thing, I like killing people because it is so much fun. It is more fun than killing wild game in the forest because man is the most dangerous animal. It's spelled uh-huh. all kinds of fucked. The most dangerous animal of all to kill. Something gives me the most thrilling experience. It is even better than getting your rocks off with a girl. The best part of it is that when I die, I will be reborn in paradise, and all the I have killed will become my slaves. I will not give you my name because you will try to slow down or stop my collecting of slaves for my afterlife. And then the last 18 letters, they were unable to decipher.
Mm-hmm.
So that part, they to this day, they still don't know. But it's like, for my afterlife, I will ebiorite meth pity. Is how it reads, if you're curious. So those are the first two letters. With my favorite thing is just like, officer is all, yeah, I don't think you did this. Give me proof. And then he's like, bet. Ooh.
Okay.
I bitch. He go. Which would not be the first or last time that that happened. So, now back to the confirmed cases. September 27th, 1969, Union Pacific College students Brian Calvin Hartnell, 20, and Cecilia Ann Shepherd, 22, were having a little picnic at Lake Berryessa in Napa County when they were approached by a man. And I, again, this scene in the movie was absolutely fucked. Like, I cannot even imagine just being out at the beach, hanging out in the middle of the day, and then seeing this just come at me. Because this man was wearing a black executioner-style hood with an attached bib and sunglasses clipped over the eye holes.
Right.
Holy fuck. Mm-hmm. No. The bib also had the crosshair symbol painted on it in white, but this took place a couple weeks before that letter was sent, mm-hmm. where he signed it that way. As the killer approached, he raised a gun, which Brian thought could have been a .45, and claimed to have recently killed a guard and escaped from a prison with two names in either Montana or Colorado. Spoiler alert, Brian survives this attack. Mm-hmm. And so he's recounting these things, but clearly it's going to be a little difficult because hi.
Yeah.
So the man continued to say that he had stolen a car and that he needed Brian and Cecilia's money and their car, citing that the stolen car was, quote unquote, too hot for him to drive it to Mexico. Because, you know, stolen car.
Stolen.
Not temperature-wise. It's yes. Hot isn't stolen. So at that point, the Zodiac produced some plastic clothesline and instructed Cecilia to tie Brian up. When he checked on the restraints, because he tied up Cecilia when she was done, he checked on the restraints and found that she had tied the line loosely, so he tightened both of their restraints. Brian would later share that he thought the whole ordeal was some kind of real weird robbery, until the man pulled out a knife and started stabbing them both.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. So Brian was stabbed a total of 6 times, while Cecilia was stabbed 10 times. After he stabbed them, Zodiac walked towards Knoxville Road, which is about 500 meters away, and drew his symbol on Brian's car door with a black felt-tip pen. Beneath that, he left a message for the police. Vallejo, 12-20-68, 7-4-69, September 27-69, 6:30, as in the time, by knife. A man and his son had been fishing nearby and happened to hear the couple's cries for help.
Getting bold.
Mm-hmm. They contacted park rangers, who in turn called the Napa County Sheriff's Department. Deputies Ray Land and Dave Collins were the first to arrive, followed shortly thereafter by the ambulance. Cecilia was still conscious when Land and Collins got there and was able to give them a description of their attacker, a white man, around 5'11", over 170 pounds. Cecilia went into a coma on the way to the hospital and died 2 days later. Mm. Brian would survive and share more details from the attack and would also go on to identify the perpetrator as the same man that Mike Mageau identified later in the 90s. At 7:40 p.m., roughly an hour after the Berryessa attacks, the Napa County Sheriff's Department received a phone call. The caller began by saying that he wanted to report a murder, no, a double murder, and quickly confessed that he had been the killer. No more than 5 minutes after the call had been placed, KVON radio reporter Pat Stanley happened to pass by the Napa car wash and noticed that the phone in the phone booth was off the hook. This phone booth was 27 miles away from the crime scene, but only a few blocks from the sheriff's department.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So officers went to the phone booth and were able to pull a partial palm print, but no match has ever been found. An officer also later deduced that the jail the killer had mentioned was most likely located in Deer Lodge, Missouri. No, Montana.
Montana.
Words. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it means nothing. It doesn't. He was like, I think that's what they were talking about. Like, great! What? Mm-hmm. Continue, please, friend, because that, nobody cares. It doesn't mean anything. October 11th, 1969. 2 weeks after the Berryessa attacks, 29-year-old taxi driver Paul Stein picked up a white male rider at the corner of Mason and Geary Streets in San Francisco. The man requested to be dropped off in the Presidio neighborhood, Washington and Maple Streets specifically. For reasons we'll never know, Paul stopped a block away on Cherry Street, where the man shot him in the head, stole his wallet and keys, and tore a piece of the man's bloody shirt off of his body.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike his previous crimes, this time there were witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
3 teenagers were across the street and watched as the man wiped down the inside of the cab before he walked off. They were on the phone to the police almost immediately and described the man as white, between 25 and 30 years old, around 5'8 or 5'9, thick-rimmed glasses, and a stocky build with a reddish-brown crew cut. When the call came in, patrol officers Don Falk and Eric Zelms were only two blocks away from the scene and later recalled a pedestrian passing them by that matched the description given by the teens. Now, instead of stopping the man to question him, they did not stop him at all. Why? Huh. Well, I mean, you'd think that someone heading away from the direction of a freshly committed murder that matches the description of the killer, you'd think they'd stop them.
One would.
But no, you fools! It actually was not their fault. The dispatcher that reported the crime, like, put out the APB to the officers, mistakenly relayed that the suspect was a black man.
Oh.
Yeah. It was only when the suspect was described on the news later when the officers realized that they had probably passed the killer on the street.
Oops.
Yeah. Big fucking yikes all around on that one.
Yeah.
Initially, police thought this had been a robbery gone wrong and investigated it as such. According to the police report, officers found a pair of black leather men's gloves inside during their search, along with bloody fingerprints on the driver's side of the cab, but no matches were made. Mm-hmm. A composite sketch of the suspect was made and distributed throughout the media. Detectives Dave Toski and Bill Armstrong were assigned to the case at this point, though it was still being investigated as a robbery gone wrong. October 14th, 1969, when the San Francisco Chronicle received another letter from the Zodiac. It read, "This is the Zodiac speaking. I am the murderer of the taxi driver over by Washington Street and Maple Street last night. To prove this, here is a blood-stained piece of his shirt. I am the same man who did in the people in the North Bay area. The SF police could have caught me last night if they had searched the park properly instead of holding road races with their motorcycles, seeing who could make the most noise.
Oh.
The car drivers should have just parked their cars and sat there quietly waiting for me to come out of cover. School children make nice targets. I think I shall wipe out a school bus or some morning. Just shoot out the front tire and then pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out."
Jesus Christ, bro.
Yeah, and he had included a piece of Paul Stein's bloody shirt with the letter. Mm-hmm. October 20th, 1969, at around 2 p.m., the Oakland Police Department received a call from a man claiming to be the Zodiac Killer. The caller demanded to have either Melvin Belli or F. Lee Bailey, both well-known attorneys, appear on Jim Dunbar's morning talk show, AM San Francisco. Only Belli was available, so he agreed to make an appearance. When the show started, Dunbar asked that the viewers refrain from calling in so they could keep the lines open for Zodiac. The station received a handful of calls from someone claiming to be the killer and eventually put him on the air to speak with Belli and Dunbar. When introducing himself to the caller, Belli asked the caller for a quote-unquote less ominous-sounding name that he could refer to them by instead of Zodiac, and the man replied, "Sam." The man said that he didn't want to reveal his identity because he was afraid of getting sent to the gas chamber. So
fair.
So Belli went on to arrange an in-person meeting on Mission Street, but no one ended up showing up. Weird how that happened.
Shocking.
November 8th, 1969. A greeting card with a picture of a dripping pen and the phrase, "Sorry, I haven't written, but I just washed my pen," was sent to the San Francisco Chronicle. It contained a piece of Paul Stein's shirt and a 340-character cipher. In addition to the fourth cipher, Zodiac also wrote, "Des July, August, September, October equals 7, which possibly alluded to more murders or bodies, but no one ever really found out what it meant. Now, the fourth cipher, which is also known as Z340, remained unsolved until December 5th of 2020, when Australian mathematician Sam Blake, Belgian programmer Jarl van Eyck, and American software engineer David Aranchak teamed up to take a crack at deciphering the 51-year-old message.
Which we have discussed previously.
We did. Just for a refresher, the cipher read, "I hope you are having lots of fun in trying to catch me. That wasn't me on the TV show, which brings up a point about me. I am not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise all the sooner because I now have enough slaves to work for me where everyone else has nothing when they reach paradise, so they are afraid of death. I am not afraid because I know that my new life is life will be an easy one in paradise death." Which,
yes.
Okay. They sent their findings to the FBI, who verified the validity of the message and its contents. However, the FBI also shared that, obviously, The message contained no identifying information. So they were essentially right where they started.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's great that that's what that says. It's not super helpful.
No, it's not helpful at all.
I mean, it's really fucking cool that you guys were able to do that.
Sure, yeah.
But also...
Yeah.
But I'd like the difference how a couple in California in 1960, whatever,
mm-hmm.
solved the first one.
Yeah. Real quick, too.
Pretty fucking fast, but nobody else since then until 51 years later.
Where'd they go?
Right? Why weren't they given the rest of these?
Right?
Like, hey, friends, you did a real good job with this one. Yeah. You want to take a crack at these?
Right?
I don't know why you wouldn't have.
Right?
But here we are.
Interesting.
Right? But yeah, after, 51 years.
That's crazy.
It is nuts. On November 9th, 1969, a 7-page letter from the Zodiac was sent to the San Francisco Chronicle, where he claimed to have spoken with police officers just moments after he'd killed Paul Stein. He would go on to write that the police shall never catch me because I have been too clever for them. Mm. I hate that he's right about that.
He sure is.
He also said that he loved to, quote unquote, needle the blue pigs.
Ooh.
He truly did not like police officers.
Yeah.
And there will be a little bit more of that later. He included a hand-drawn schematic for a bomb that he was threatening to make and use on children, saying that he would have sent photos of it, but, and this is from the letter, you would be nasty enough to trace them back to developer and then to me, so I shall describe my masterpiece to you. The nice part of it is all the parts can be bought on the open market with no questions asked. Holy shit!
Yeah.
I mean, I know that. And yeah. It is an obvious fact, but please do not point it out.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Fucking terrifying.
Yeah. Truly. Like, yeah. I could not imagine receiving that letter in 1969
mm-hmm.
with the maniac who has already killed at least 3 people at this mm-hmm. point. And four attacks. Anyway, but just like clearly unhinged being like, hey, guess what? I can literally go to any hardware store, buy everything to make a bomb,
mm-hmm.
and kill any school children I feel like.
Yeah.
Just, oh my God. Absolutely terrifying. So, 3 days later, the Chronicle printed a story with a few excerpts from that letter, including his alleged conversation with the police. Sensing he was about to be publicly screwed, Officer Folk wrote a letter of his own describing how they had received the wrong suspect information and were totally unaware of the killer's description until well after the call had been made.
Right.
Which, good call, sir.
Yeah.
Great call. December 20th, 1969, Melvin Belli received a letter from the Zodiac that included another piece of Paul Stein's shirt. The letter read, Dear Melvin, this is the Zodiac speaking. I wish you a happy Christmas. And the way he spells Christmas is Christ Mass.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's like Christmas with an extra S, but it's very scary. And this is still the letter. The one thing I ask of you is this, please help me. I cannot reach out for help because of this thing in me won't let me. I am finding it extremely difficult to hold it in check. I am afraid I will lose control again and take my 9th, possibly 10th victim. Please help me. I am drowning. At the moment, the children are safe from the bomb because it is so massive to dig in and the trigger mech requires much work to get it adjusted just right. But if I hold back too long from number 9, I will lose. And he started to write complete and crossed it out. I will lose all control of myself and set the bomb up. Please help me. I cannot remain in control for much longer.
Damn.
It was postmarked on the 1-year anniversary of the murders of David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen.
Huh.
So those are all of the confirmed Zodiac cases. Uh-huh. And now we're going to get into the
others,
the potential ties to him. And this is March 22nd, 1970. 22-year-old Kathleen Johns and her 10-month-old daughter Jennifer had left San Bernardino to go visit Kathleen's sick mother in Petaluma. At around 11:15 that night, she was right outside of Modesto when the car behind her started to flash its lights and honk at her, with the driver motioning for her to pull over. Mm-hmm. So she was slightly concerned, and she pulled off to the side of the road and parked her car. And the man that had been behind her followed suit and approached her car to let her know that her right rear wheel was kind of wobbly, and then he offered to tighten the lug nuts for her. Being 7 months pregnant with a 10-month-old in tow, Kathleen thanked him and accepted his offer. Because you've got a baby and then you're pregnant, there's no way you're going to be able to like tighten those lug nuts in the middle of the night.
Right, it's just
a horrible thing. So after he was done, he got back into his car and pulled out onto the highway. And Kathleen got back on the road shortly after. Almost immediately, the right rear wheel came off.
Oh, fuck. He loosened them.
The man was just ahead of her, so he turned around and offered her a ride to the nearest gas station so she could call for help. She again accepted his offer, and both Kathleen and Jennifer got into the car. They passed countless gas stations, but the man continued driving back and forth on the back roads of San Joaquin County. I believe it was somewhere called Tracy?
Yeah.
Okay. But just driving back and forth for, it was like a 90-minute hell ride. And she, I'm assuming somewhere near the beginning part of this ride, asked him why he wasn't stopping. But instead of answering her whenever she would ask, he would just change the subject.
That's creepy as fuck.
Yeah, I hate it. Oh, I hate it so much. Kathleen and Jennifer jumped out of the man's car once he had stopped at an intersection and hid in a nearby field. He searched for them, shining a flashlight into the field and promised that he wasn't going to hurt them. After a while, though, he gave up on trying to find them, got back into his car, and disappeared. Mm-hmm. Kathleen then hitched a ride to Patterson, where she immediately went to the police to report what had just happened. While giving a statement to the sergeant, she noticed the sketch of Paul Stein's killer and said that he looked like the man that had just abducted her and her daughter. Mm-hmm. Kathleen's car was found roughly 2 miles from where she had left it, completely torched. Just 2 miles away and on fire. Mm-hmm. There are some accounts of the story where Kathleen says the man threatened to kill her and her daughter, but none of the police reports corroborate that at all. Like, no police reports have her saying that he threatened to kill her. This is just, she said in later interviews, like on television and what have you. In other statements that she made, she said the man never got out of his car, despite having told the police that he searched the field with a flashlight. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of discrepancies.
Yes.
But also, being 7 months pregnant with a baby in tow, having a man drive you around for 90 minutes, your story might get a little weird.
Yes.
A little muddled.
Muddled.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like,
no thank you to all of that. All of it.
Thank you, no.
Yeah, I hate it. July 24th, 1970, someone claiming to be the Zodiac sent another letter to the Chronicle saying, "This is the Zodiac speaking. I am rather unhappy because you people will not wear some nice Zodiac buttons. So now I have a little list starting with that woman and her baby that I gave a rather interesting ride to for a couple hours one evening a few months back that ended in my burning her car where I found them." And also of note, and that's why I was stumbling, because reading his direct quotes are weird because they're spelled so fucked.
Right, right.
But the way that he spelled woman is woe man, W-O-E.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So whether that letter was from someone impersonating him or actually
hard to
the
say.
Zodiac did confess to another crime, we'll never know, probably. And here are now some of the potential Zodiac victims. October 30th, 1966, right around Halloween, very spooky and sad. So 18-year-old Riverside City College freshman Sherry Jo Bates was studying at the library until it closed at 9 p.m. She had left her dad a note, like, "Dad, I'm going to the library." About 90 minutes after the library had closed, people reported hearing screaming from the area. Sherry Jo's body was discovered the next morning between two abandoned houses not far from the library. She had been violently beaten and stabbed to death. Most of her wounds were focused on her chest, but she also received cuts to her face and neck. Her throat was slashed so violently that she was nearly decapitated.
Yeah.
Sherry Jo fought back, though, because hair and skin were found under her nails and in her hands, which presumably belonged to her attacker. When police located her car in the nearby parking lot, they found that the distributor cap had been removed. There were prints found on the car, but no matches were ever made. A man's Timex watch, which had stopped at 12:24, was found near the scene with a torn band. The time was noted, but it's believed that the murder happened long before the watch had stopped.
Right.
And a footprint belonging to a type of boot only available at a military outlet was also found near the scene.
Right.
November 29th, 1966, almost exactly a month later, both the Riverside Police and the Riverside Press Enterprise received typed letters that were titled The Confession. In the letters, the author claimed to have been responsible for killing Sherry Jo and added details of the crime that hadn't been released to the public. They also said that Miss Bates was stupid. She went to the slaughter like a lamb. And then another quote, I am not sick, I am insane. And then went on to say that Sherry Jo, quote unquote, is not the first and she will not be the last. And each letter was signed with a symbol that looked similar to the letter Z. December 1966, no exact date, but a poem that had been carved into a desk was discovered in the Riverside City College Library. It was titled Sick of Living, Unwilling to Die. In 1970, Sherwood Morrill, a handwriting expert, was working with the police on the Zodiac investigation and believed that the poem and letters were written by the Zodiac. He's like, yeah, these letters and this poem, same guy.
Yeah.
For the curious, the poem reads, and it's very
interesting.
Oddly formatted.
Yeah, it is.
Cut, clean, if red, clean, blood spurting, dripping, spilling, all over her new dress. Oh, well, it was red anyway. Life draining into an uncertain death. She won't die. This time, someone will find her. Just wait till next time. And it's signed R.H. So April 30th, 1967, exactly 6 months after Sherry Jo's murder, her father Joseph, Riverside Police, and the Riverside Press Enterprise all received nearly identical handwritten letters from the killer. The main differences between the letters was the ones that were sent to the police and the Press Enterprise stated that, quote-unquote, Bates had to die, there will be more, where her father's letter read, she had to die, there will be more.
Huh.
His letter, her father's, was also missing the Z-like signature that the other two letters had.
Interesting.
Just that very subtle difference.
Very subtle.
Very sets my everything on edge.
Yeah.
It's too personal.
Yeah.
It's too personal. I don't like it. October 27th, 1970, journalist Paul Avery was also Robert Downey Jr. So that's
yes.
just how I see him in my head now.
So Robert Downey Jr.
Yes. So journalist Robert Downey Jr., Paul Avery. Robert Downey Avery. He'd been covering the Zodiac case for the San Francisco Chronicle, and on this day received a Halloween card addressed to him, but it had actually been misspelled as Averly, so oh. just adding an L in there for no reason, and it was from the Zodiac. The front said, from your secret pal, it's got a skeleton on it, so this makes more sense. From your secret pal, I feel it in my bones, you ache to know my name, and so I'll clue you in. And then on the inside, but why spoil the game? And peekaboo, you are doomed, written inside.
Jesus.
Uh-huh. I looked at pictures of it. It is very creepy. Like, very creepy. So it was signed with a Z in the Zodiac's signature crosshair symbol. Written above the cartoon skeleton inside the card was the number 4 and then teen, which police believe to imply the number of Zodiac's victims. Sorry, no cipher was written in an X shape on the back of the envelope, while the back of the card itself had the words paradise and slaves intersecting in a plus sign shape, surrounded by the phrases, by fire, by knife, by gun, and by rope.
That's weird.
It's fucking...
Would you like a gum?
I would, please.
Mentos the Freshmaker gum?
Yeah. Weird pause for this, but also... oh, please don't... Someone just fell, and her name is Danielle. She was trying to hand me gum, and she fell out of her chair. And this is my favorite thing that has quite possibly ever happened on this show of all time. That was amazing. She's just cackling on the floor. This is great. This is just amazing. Keep it up. You're doing great.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I was on my knees and I leaned a little too far forward.
She's trying to get me some gum. She just tumbled.
It's my T-Rex arms.
It is.
They just weren't long enough to get you the fresh maker.
No, ma'am, they were not.
Oh, fuck. Oh, shit.
That was amazing.
Oh, god damn it.
That was exactly what I needed.
Oh.
Oh, boy. Both the gum and that.
Oh, god damn.
Whole situation. Oh, so good.
Oh.
Bless you for that whole thing. So good. That was amazing. Fuck.
Wow.
That was good.
Okay.
I was going to say that as a child, I really loved the mint Mentos.
Yes.
And would get like, I don't know what it was about them, but every time I would eat them, I would get like extra hyphy. Just be like, ah!
It's the best. I like the strawberry ones too.
Never had those. I just like the mint ones. No, but I would get like hyper.
Ooh.
I don't know why.
It's a fresh maker.
There was also many a TikTok where they would put different things to the Mentos theme song, and they just ended up being really fucking hilarious, like super terrible things happening. I think somebody did one with the movie Alien.
Oh, God.
I'll have to find it and show it to you because I cackled in my bed for probably an unacceptable amount of time.
Way too long.
But I've also had the Mentos theme song on and off in my head since that.
Okay.
And Larissa,
fair.
Our friend that was on the show, she made one. And I was like, God damn it, these are so good.
Oh, that's fucking hilarious.
It was fucking hilarious. Anyway.
Well.
That aside, because that was fucking great. Anyway, horrifying card that he just received at, like, no thank you. Like, do you imagine working on a case like this? Just as a journalist. And then getting singled out by a fucking serial killer?
No.
Who could be literally anyone and anywhere.
Anywhere. And he knows where you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Sent you a card.
Yeah. So shortly after receiving that, the incident made the front page of the Chronicle. And then Avery began carrying a gun.
Yeah.
Which, fucking fair.
Good call, Robert Ave. Ravery.
Robert Downey Avery.
Yeah.
Or
Ave.
Rave. Rave.
The bralessness has gone to our heads.
It's true. Between the bralessness and the mint Mentos gum and you culture club tumbling for me onto the floor, it's all bets are off. It's all over. It's been a weird fucking week, guys. So
sure as fuck has.
And so Paul Avery started carrying a gun. And then his fellow Chronicle reporters started wearing buttons that read, I am not Paul Avery. Which is hilarious and fucking rude. Just, I would be so mad if I were Paul Avery. I'd be like, can I get one of those, you goddamn motherfuckers?
Right? It's not like we are all Negan. I am not fucking Paul Avery.
Yeah. Oh, so fucking good. So... Not long after receiving the world's most terrifying Halloween card, Avery received a tip pointing out similarities between the Zodiac murders and the 4-year-old unsolved murder of Sherry Jo Bates.
Because
at the time, no connection had been made.
None.
Nope. So, and again, before this anonymous letter, it was believed that Zodiac had only been operating in the Bay Area. So with the horrifying reality that Zodiac could have a much wider net than initially thought, Avery wrote up his findings tying Zodiac to Bates for the Chronicle on November 16th, 1970. Like, could you just, like, first of all, you're like, okay, this is scary enough. We've got a faceless maniac in the Bay Area. But holy shit. What if he's not?
Right.
And again, he could be anyone and he could be anywhere.
Sure could.
Fucking terrifying. Mm-hmm. So, March 13th, 1971, the Los Angeles Times received a letter from Zodiac commending the police for figuring out the connection between himself and, so this is a quote, the Riverside activity, but they are only finding the easy ones. There are a hell of a lot more down there.
Ooh.
Yeah. Police and Avery didn't believe that Zodiac actually committed Sherry Joe's murder, but think that he may have written in to take credit for it. The truth? No idea. Police suspected an ex of Sherry Joe's was the real killer, and in the late 90s, they ran his DNA against the hairs found in Sherry Joe's hand, but it wasn't a match.
Right.
And for me, I don't know if they didn't see the connection, and they're like, it definitely wasn't that guy, whether because of evidence or if they were just terrified to admit
that. Well, and the thing, too, is, I mean, with Zodiac, you can't even say his MO is the same because it's not.
You really can't. You can't know that for sure because motherfucker just liked to kill. Mm-hmm. So there's no.
Yeah.
I mean, shot people, stabbed people,
yep.
Threatened a bomb.
Right.
A school bus full of children.
Right.
Couples.
Yeah.
People that were alone. There was no. And that's, again, one of the things that makes him absolutely terrifying.
Yes.
There's no rhyme or reason. It's just because he can, so he did.
Yes.
I hate it. So, where did I go?
Where did you go? Where did you go?
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from? There we go. March 22nd, 1971. Another letter addressed to Paul Averly was sent to the Chronicle. This time, the author, presumably Zodiac, confessed to yet another unsolved case. This time, it was for the September 6th, 1970 disappearance of 22-year-old Donna Lass. So Donna had been a nurse at the Sahara Tahoe Hotel and Casino at the time, had been working the day of her disappearance. Mm-hmm. She finished up with her patients around 2 a.m., with her final patient being at 1:40 a.m., as written in her logbook. Her landlord and boss would both go on to report that they'd received strange phone calls from a man claiming that Donna had left town due to a family emergency, which her family said wasn't true.
Right.
Police found her car abandoned near her apartment, but Donna was nowhere to be found. The letter was exactly what comes to mind when you think of a creepy stalker. It was a collage made using pictures and phrases from various magazines.
Ew.
Yeah. Included in the madness were an ad for the Forest Pine condos in Lake Tahoe, along with the cryptic phrases Sierra Club, Sought Victim 12, Pass Lake Tahoe Areas, Around in the Snow, and Peek Through the Pines.
Jesus fuck.
Uh-huh. While no real connection between the Zodiac and Donna Lass's appearance have been made, it is noteworthy to point out that she worked at San Francisco's Letterman General Hospital in 1970. Why is that noteworthy? Well, the hospital is on the Presidio military base, which happened to be near where Paul Stein was murdered.
Yes.
Could be nothing, but maybe it's something.
Could be something.
Could be something. November 13th, 1972, the Vallejo Times Herald printed a story that reportedly tied the Zodiac to another set of murders. According to the article, Bill Baker from the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office believed that the June 4th, 1963 murders of Lompoc High School seniors Robert Domingos and Linda Edwards were the work of the Zodiac. He went on to say that the pair used their senior ditch day to go to the beach near Gaviota State Park. They hadn't returned home by the following day, so Robert's father went out to look for them, and sadly, he found them.
Uh-oh.
He discovered their bodies inside of a dilapidated old shack.
Ooh.
The couple had been tied up with rope and were shot with a .22 when they had apparently tried to escape. Linda had been shot 9 times and Robert 11. After dragging their bodies to the shack, the killer tried and failed to burn the place down.
Huh.
There were very few promising leads until about 9 years later when a tiny connection to Zodiac appeared. The ammunition used to kill Robert and Linda was Winchester Western Super X, which was the same kind that had been killed, been used to kill Daniel or David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen in 68. Mm-hmm. Which, and I'm not sure if that was a common ammunition at the time.
Probably. I mean, but depending on what kind of gun you're using, it probably is.
Yeah. So I did not look into it. Don't know. If you know, tell me. But to have two murders so similar like that with the same brand of ammunition, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, his confirmed kills are all couples, except for...
Well, Paul Stein.
Right.
And then Mike Mageau survived, and Brian also survived.
But they survived, but they were in pairs. Except other for Paul Stein. Right, Paul Stein. He was the only solo. You know, his MO does bounce around a bit, but, you know, he went for couples. Are you trying to crack your back? Did you get it?
I did. Okay, it wasn't as satisfying as I wanted it to be.
Bummer. Hate when that happens.
It's just a little one. It's just a little one. So, those are presumed, rumored to be tied, whether they were or not. There was also one in Albany, New York.
Yeah.
Which I didn't put in here. Mm-hmm. So, I'm like,
oh. I know. That one feels right, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
The definitely one in, feels right.
Yeah. The one in Albany.
Didn't feel right?
No.
Yeah. What's the point then?
Yeah, it was, they, police got another letter, I think it was in 73, but I was just like, or did I write about it? I think I may have wrote about the, I may have written about the letter.
Okay.
But there are so many fucking letters.
Yeah.
Here's some more. April 20th, 1970, and again, remember, I'm just jumping around. So the Chronicle received another letter from the Zodiac. This is the Zodiac speaking. By the way, have you cracked the last cipher I sent you? My name is blank, which was followed by a 13-character cipher. And I hope you don't think that I was the one who wiped out that blue meanie with a bomb at the cop station. Even though I talked about killing school children with one, it just wouldn't do to move in on someone else's territory. But there is more glory to killing a cop than a kid because a cop can shoot back. I have killed 10 people to date. It would have been a lot more, except that my bus bomb was a dud.
Damn.
It's believed that the author of the letter was referencing the bombing of San Francisco's Park Station PD in February of that same year. And 2 days after the incident, Sergeant Brian McDonald died of shrapnel-related injuries.
Interesting.
Yeah. So just a couple months difference. And he's like, that one wasn't me. He also included a diagram of the bomb that he had planned on using to blow up the school bus and signed off with his symbol equals 10 SFPD equals zero.
Damn.
Yeah. April 28th, 1970, another greeting card was mailed to the offices of the Chronicle. This time he threatened to actually use his bomb on children unless the paper printed everything that he had said. He signed the card with a symbol and signed off with, I hope you enjoy yourselves when I have my blast.
Oh.
All caps.
Yeah. I see what you did there, buddy.
Yeah. He also mentioned that he'd like to see people wearing Zodiac buttons, which I mentioned earlier when talking about Kathleen Johns, but I believe this was the first actual mention of them since the letter sent after Johns's encounter was sent a few months after this letter. Just like, and he spells buttons with one T, and it's just reading everything is, like, it just, my brain aches.
Yeah.
Because it's so fucking weird, but I get that some of it's, like, deciphered, which also...
Fair.
I just put it together recently. Cipher and decipher. Like, I never thought about it because I never really use the word cipher.
Right.
And so I was like, oh. Okay. It's only taken me apparently 36 years to realize this information. I'm dumb. It's fine. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's like I was 2 years old when I figured it out.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
June 26th, 1970. This time, he shared his disappointment in not seeing anyone wearing Zodiac buttons. He went on to say that, I shot a man sitting in a parked car with a 38, which was believed to be in reference to the murder of 25-year-old Sergeant Richard Raditich.
Sure.
Yep. on June 19th. At 5:25 in the morning, Sergeant Radetich was sitting in his squad car writing out a parking ticket when an unknown assailant approached the closed driver's side window and shot him in the head.
Oof.
The weapon used was, in fact, a 38 caliber pistol, but the San Francisco Police Department vehemently denies Zodiac's involvement.
Okay.
In the letter, he also included a map of the Bay Area with a symbol like his crosshairs over Mount Diablo with the numbers 0, 3, 6, and 9 written above it. He then instructed the reader that 0, quote unquote, was to be set to Mag N, so north.
Okay.
The letter also contained a 32-character cipher that said he would that he said would lead to a bomb he'd buried and that he would detonate in the fall. The numbers 0369 were allegedly a code to defuse the bomb. He signed off Zodiac 12 SFPD 0. A bomb was never located or detonated in the implied area, and the cipher was never solved.
Huh.
And I will come back to this just now. So July 26, 1970, 2 days after the letter regarding Kathleen Johns, another letter came in. This one was 5 pages long, and this time borrowed lyrics from Gilbert and Sullivan's The Mikado. Except instead of the original lyrics, Zodiac wrote about his own little list. Again, apparently this man liked musicals. Specifically The Mikado. Weird choices.
Right.
Odd choice. Because it's not the last time that will happen. So, again, he wrote about his own little list, where he went into detail about how he would torture his slaves in paradise. This time the sign-off was Zodiac 13 SFPD 0, alluding to another victim. In the postscript of the letter, he wrote, P.S. The Mount Diablo code concerns radians and number inches along the radians. So this information was looked at again in 1981. And Zodiac researcher Gareth Penn discovered that when you placed a radian angle over a map like Zodiac had instructed, it pointed to the locations of two known Zodiac murders. Blue Ooh. Rock Springs Park and 3898 Washington Street in San Francisco. If we've forgotten, those are where Darlene Farrett and Mike Bajot were attacked and where Paul Stein was killed in his cab.
Right.
An interesting coincidence? Part of a bigger plan? No idea.
So fucking bizarre.
Yep. And so there, this guy, Gareth Penn, wrote his own book about this. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's really not great.
Okay.
It's just like a lot of theories, which... obviously
it all is
and they're like, well, he didn't take into account this part when rate measuring, but I'm like, it's too much math, don't talk to me about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no,
but the code, the 0369, the way it's written on the map that he sent, and those instructions that zero is supposed to be north, makes it so it's like northeast, southwest, like a little compass, is really fucking interesting. Whether it's full, like, whether it's shit or not, I don't know, because I'm not a cartographer. I am not a pilot nor a ship captain, but I thought it was cool. It's like, interesting. But even if his calculations are off a little bit, it's still weird that they point to those two places.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even in the general vicinity, because I think he accidentally mixed up the Blue Rock Park and the golf course, which are close together, but not the same spot.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like, still.
Yeah.
Close enough?
Yeah.
October 5th, 1970, the Chronicle received a postcard, allegedly from the Zodiac. Instead of being handwritten or typed, it also had phrases cut out of papers and glued to the card. It read, "Dear editor, you'll hate me, but I've got to tell you, the pace isn't any slower. In fact, it's just one big 13th.
Oh.
Yep. Most of the, I think it was, the pace isn't any slower. It's, in fact, it's just one big, that was all taken from a comic strip called Smidgens, by the way. On the other half of the postcard, the number 13 was above a cross, which had allegedly been drawn in blood. And one word, or in the word Zodiac, spelled out, in cutout letters with the symbol written beside it. There was also a PS that read, "There are reports, city police, pig cops are closing in on me. FK, I'm assuming that means fuck. I'm crack proof. What is the price tag now?"
Damn.
There were also 13 holes punched into the card, because this was the card itself. The postcard was actually just like a 3x5 card. So there are 13 holes punched into the card, leading some people to believe that the Zodiac was attempting to create his own kind of like decoder ring. Because also around the time they were like, you know, you get in comic books and stuff.
Yeah, the little
decoders.
Yeah.
It was like a Dick Tracy decoder, I think it was. So they're like, maybe he was doing that. Because to me, they look just like random hole punches, but maybe there's a pattern.
It could be the number of victims.
Could be. But yeah, they're like, maybe it's that. But detectives Armstrong and Toski both believe that that letter was authentic. Bless you.
Because at this point, he's at 12 or 13 victims.
Hard to say.
Right.
I mean...
Because, I mean, the term, punch, I'm going to punch a card, means I'm going to take you out. And if you're punching holes in a card...
In July... You know what I mean?
That's what I would take it as.
Well, in July, he said 13.
Right.
And then that one came in October, so...
That's what I would take it as, that he's killed 13 people and he punched their card.
Again, you would think, but nobody knows.
No.
The final official... Zodiac letter came on January 29th, 1974. Mm-hmm. So after the letter sent on March 22nd, 1971 about Donna Lass, Zodiac went silent.
Radio silence.
Uh-huh. Almost 3 years went by before another letter appeared at the Chronicle offices. This time he wrote, I saw and think The Exorcist was the best satirical comedy that I have ever seen. Signed yours truly. He plunged himself into the billowy wave, and an echo arose from the suicide's grave. Titwillow, titwillow, titwillow. P.S. If I do not see this letter in your paper, I will do something nasty, which you know I am capable of doing. Me, 37. SFPD, 0. So this is implying that there had been 24 more victims since his last tally on July 26, 1974. Or, I'm sorry, 1970. There was also... another weird cipher drawn at the bottom of the letter that remains unsolved. Also, the odd and seemingly coherent poem that he wrote? No. Lyrics to another song from the Mikado called On a Tree by a River, a Little Tom Tit. Which is fucking hilarious. I mean, too long for a title, but...
Yes.
Gilbert and Sullivan rein it in a little bit.
Tom Tit.
Tom Tit. But yeah. This fucking the one thing we know about Zodiac, he apparently really loves the Mikado.
Sure
that's,
did.
That's like three times, I believe. Mm-hmm. Bruh.
Right.
Also, researching all of that, just got three little maids from school stuck in my head because I'm a theater nerd and I know the Mikado.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, this is the worst thing you've done personally to me. Just kidding. It's the murder. It's all the murder is the worst that he's done.
You're a victim here.
I am a victim here.
Being victimized by the fucking Zodiac.
From the beyond.
From the fucking beyond.
Mate? Potentially.
Here's the thing.
I mean.
We'll get to that. We'll get there.
Maybe. But also.
We'll get there.
So over the years, plenty of other letters were sent from people claiming to be the Zodiac Killer, but most of them were disregarded as hoaxes. In fact, one such letter was received on April 24th, 1978. It was thought to be an authentic Zodiac letter, but 3 months later, people started to think that it was a hoax and blamed it on Detective Dave Toski. He did admit to writing a piece of fan mail that praised his efforts on the case in 1976, but denied writing the 1978 Zodiac letter. It's unclear whether that letter was actually from the Zodiac or not. Here we go. This is the one I was talking about earlier. But, you know, it was like, they don't know if it's authentic. They did an investigation to see if Toski did it, and he was innocent and did not write it. Another letter from August of 73 was sent to the Albany Times Union, a paper in New York. It had a symbol similar to the one that Zodiac had used and read, "You are wrong. I'm not dead or in the hospital. I am alive and well, and I'm going to start killing again. Below is the name and location of my next victim, but you had better hurry because I'm going to kill her August 10th at 5 p.m. when the shift change. Albany is a nice town." Below that, the author included three rows of random symbols, which FBI cryptanalysts were able to decipher, and they read, "Redacted, Albany Medical Center." I'm assuming that was the person's name. This is the only, or the whole thing, Red Redacted, Albany Medical Center. This is the only, this is only the beginning. Mm-hmm. No murders were able to be connected to the date of August 10th, especially with that person.
That person's
that was named
name.
Specifically. And while out of his typical jurisdiction, the lack of testing on all of it leaves the authenticity of that specific letter wide open.
Huh.
That said, some handwriting experts say the writing in the letter wasn't a match to the known Zodiac letters. I've seen it, and it doesn't look the same at all.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I know that handwriting analysis
is
questionable
at best.
But sometimes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It can be fucking helpful.
Yeah.
Even if you can't use it in court, you'd be like, okay, but I see you.
Right.
I also think about that all the time, like when I'm handwriting stuff. I'm like, I wonder what a handwriting analyst would say. Analyst? Words about mine, be like, oh, there's no way she wrote this because this is how she doesn't connect this letter to this letter. And I'm like, yeah, because my brain is dumb.
An analrapist?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Dr. Fumke, your car is a poor choice of plates. It was like season 5 or something of Arrested Development. He gets his personalized place that's supposed to say a new start, but it ends up reading anus tart.
Because he's an analrapist.
He is an analrapist. So yeah, again, handwriting, just, they're like, no, but when you do look at them, it's no, it doesn't look the same.
Fair.
And his spelling and handwriting and everything is pretty distinct when you look at it. So the case was deemed inactive in 2004, by the SFPD, but a few years later they reopened it. The case has remained open in both Riverside and Napa County the whole time. In May of 2018, the Vallejo PD announced plans to try and get DNA from the back of the stamps on some of the letters that he had sent. The tests were going to be done in a private lab, and taking a page from the Golden State Killer would then be ran through databases like GEDmatch in the hopes of finding a living relative. As of now, no results have been made public, but what a fucking great reminder to opt in.
Great fucking reminder.
Jesus Christ. And that is my portion. My sources were history.com, Michael Butterfield, Wikipedia, biography.com, Sarah Kettler, timetoast.com, Lucas Vogt, wikisource.org, findagrave.com, SF Examiner, cdn.history.com, zodiackiller.com, zodiologists.com, and zodiaciphers.com. Marcelo Leandro.
Okay. So, before I get into the suspects for Zodiac, and there are plenty.
Oh boy, aren't there.
I'm going to touch on another Lover's Lane murder spree real quick that took place between February and May of 1946 that left 5 people dead in Texarkana. Now, I realize that there's a 23-year difference between the two, but it is still totally plausible and possible. And my intention was to cover the entire story of the Texarkana murders as a preface to my covering the Zodiac suspects, but the story is long and way more in-depth than I thought, and the list of Zodiac suspects keeps growing. So I'm just going to touch briefly on the Texarkana Moonlight murders and save the rest for an episode coming real soon. So the Texarkana Moonlight murders are, in my opinion, really interesting because they were either carried out by the Zodiac, or he took some pointers from the 1946 murders. The case is also unsolved, and the MO established for the killer was that he attacked young couples in empty or private areas, aka lover's lanes, just outside city limits, and he used a .32 caliber gun. He always attacked on the weekends, usually 3 weeks apart, and always late at night. The victims of the first attack were the only victims able to give a description of their attacker, and they described him as being about 6 feet tall and wearing a white executioner-style hood over his face with holes cut out for the eyes and mouth. Coincidence or no? And it's not, you know, a pointy hood. It's literally a rectangular style, just like the black one that the Zodiac wore. Witness descriptions of Zodiac are a bit varied, but the man wore his mask, which, so it all makes sense. Zodiac's height ranged from 5'8 to 6'1, 190 to 210 pounds, and 28 to 45 years old. Now, the sketch of the man seen at the Lake Berryessa, or at Lake Berryessa before the attack on September 27th, 1969, depicted a Caucasian male adult with a round face and dark hair. Officer Don Fauch said the suspect that he observed was a white male, 35 to 45, about 5'10", 180 to 200 pounds. Medium heavy build, barrel chested, medium complexion, light colored hair, possibly graying in the back. Crew cut, glasses, dressed in a dark blue zip up jacket, navy or royal blue. Now, he also said that the subject at no time appeared to be in a hurry, walking in a shuffling slope, slightly bent forward. So estimates regarding the killer's age, which really does vary, shows that witnesses often have difficulty when judging age due to subjectivity.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea how old anyone is ever.
Right. The younger witnesses often overestimate the age of older suspects or individuals, and everyone judges the age of others based mostly on appearance. Mm-hmm. So assuming that all the witnesses were describing the same individual, we must also assume that they were all mistaken regarding his age. Mm-hmm. If the girls at the lake saw the Zodiac before he put on his hood, then the lowest age estimate for the killer is mid to late 20s. While the Stein witnesses believe that the suspect was almost two decades older mm-hmm. in his early to mid 40s.
Which is funny because they're teenagers.
Right.
So as a teenager, when you see someone older than you, you automatically assume they've got to be ancient,
right?
When that could very well be a 16-year-old seeing someone who's 25.
Yeah,
you have no idea.
So
I'm
most,
36. People never get that.
Right. Well, and my yeah,
exactly.
You know, and most people would not assume that a man with a full head of brown, wavy, or even curly hair would be 40 years old. But if the same man had a crew cut and glasses in the late 60s, some might assume that he's older because of his hairstyle and appearance. So even a younger man with a receding hairline can appear older. There's a lot of varying, because yep. the witnesses at Lake Berryessa mm-hmm. saw someone who may not have even been associated with and is completely different than the witnesses for the Stein murder. Mm-hmm. So now for our suspects. The number one suspect is Arthur Lee Allen, mm-hmm. who, if you saw the movie Zodiac, was played by John Carroll Lynch, who yes. also played Twisty the Clown and Mr. Jingles on American Horror Story. He's wonderful. Now, the general public tends to believe that he was the killer and all the claims against him must be true because they were A, in a best-selling book, B, in a popular movie. However, the few actual facts may point more toward him not necessarily being Zodiac, but in my opinion, he was still a killer.
Oh, absolutely.
So Robert Graysmith's book, Zodiac, which made Arthur Lee Allen, who died in 1992, a suspect, was all based on circumstantial evidence. Mm-hmm. Allen had been interviewed by police from the early days of the Zodiac investigations and was the subject of several search warrants over a 20-year period. Mm-hmm. In 2007, Graysmith noted that several police detectives described Allen as the most likely suspect. In 2010, SFPD homicide detective Dave Tosche stated that all the evidence against Allen ultimately turned out to be negative. Tosche's daughter said in 2018 that her father had always thought Allen had been the killer, but they never had the evidence to prove it. Mm-hmm. On October 6th, 1969, Allen was interviewed by Detective John Lynch of the Vallejo Police Department. And Allen had reportedly been in the vicinity of the Lake Berryessa attack against Hartnell and Shepard on... Turn page. Mm-hmm. My pages are stuck. There we go. September 27th, 1969. He said that he had been scuba diving at Salt Point on the day of the attacks.
Okay.
So the witnesses that saw him there, I mean, he was there. He was on the authorities' radar again in 1971 when his friend Donald Cheney reported to police in Manhattan Beach, California, that Allen had talked about his desire to kill people using the name Zodiac and talked about attaching a flashlight to a firearm for visibility at night, which is pretty fucking specific.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, this is 1971, so all the details about Zodiac were out. People knew.
Yeah.
Now, Don had lived with Allen's brother, Ron, during his college years and became friends with Arthur Lee Allen via that relationship. And according to Cheney, this conversation occurred no later than January 1st, 1969. But there is something to note. In 1968, Don Cheney had told a friend that Arthur Allen had attempted to molest his daughter. So bank that.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Allen had been in the military, but received an other than honorable discharge from the U.S. Navy in 1958 and had been fired from his job as an elementary school teacher in March of 1968 after allegations of sexual misconduct with students.
Ugh.
So I am going to note here that I do believe that Zodiac was in the military.
Oh, yeah.
So he was generally...
I feel like, and I don't know why, but I just had the thought... Because he really fucking hated cops.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he had tried to become one some point. And they were like, for whatever reason, no.
Oh, he probably didn't pass the psychological. Yeah.
Weird how that would have happened.
Right. So Allen was generally well regarded by those who knew him, but he was also described as being fixated on young children and quite the misogynist and angry at women in general.
Yuck.
He never had a girlfriend or a wife. As for the Zodiac letters sent to the papers, where am I? I lost it. There we go. As for the letters and other, blah, 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 so many fucking words.
It's one of those days.
I know. As for the Zodiac letters sent to the papers, Graysmith and others frequently cite that Allen was ambidextrous and could write with both hands, which he was. And mm-hmm. they concluded that that is how he had fooled the handwriting experts, who concluded that he did not write the Zodiac letters.
Yeah.
Several experts examined many samples of Allen's handwriting produced by both his left and right hands, some obtained with and without his knowledge.
Oops.
Every single expert concluded that Allen did not write the Zodiac letters. September 1972, San Francisco police obtained a search warrant for Allen's residence. There's nothing else there. In 1974, Allen was arrested for sexually assaulting a 12-year-old boy, to which he pled guilty and served 2 years. Allen remained in the Atascadero Hospital for the Criminally Insane until summer of 1977. When he was released, he returned back to Vallejo. Vallejo police served another search warrant at Allen's residence in February of 1991. 2 days after Allen's death in 1992, Vallejo police served another warrant and seized property from his residence. There was plenty of evidence against Allen, but it was all entirely circumstantial. A letter sent to the Riverside Police Department in November of 1966 from Sherry Joe Bates' killer was typed with a Royal typewriter with an Elite type, which is the same typewriter found during the February 1991 search of Allen's residence. I mean, coincidence? I don't know.
Right.
He owned and wore a Zodiac brand wristwatch. However, Zodiac watches were very popular in the 60s and 70s.
Still are.
And were advertised in many magazines and ads. He lived in Vallejo. He worked minutes away from where one of the Zodiac victims, Darlene Farron, lived, and from where one of the killings took place. In 1991, retired Vallejo detective George Bewart once again interviewed Don Cheney, and this time, Cheney changed his story and made several statements which contradicted his previous statements. Yet, Bewart still believed Cheney to be a credible witness. Cheney took a polygraph test, and the results were inconclusive. A second test allegedly indicated that Cheney was telling the truth about what Allen had said.
Mm-hmm.
Don Cheney was interviewed again in 2006, but he was then claiming that Allen had taken him to a Zodiac crime scene, and had confessed that he was hired as a contract killer by the husband of one of the Zodiac victims and had known another victim and more. Like, Cheney saying that he was hired.
Mm-hmm.
His behavior proved beyond any doubt that he was making shit up.
Yeah.
Probably to falsely accuse Alan because of the alleged molestation attempt.
Yeah. It also sounds like he liked the attention a little
bit. Right. So even George Bewart changed his opinion and stated publicly that he then now questioned Chaney's honesty and even wondered if he was somehow involved in the Zodiac crimes.
Oh, a little projection situation.
Mm-hmm. In 2002, the SFPD developed a partial DNA profile from the saliva on stamps and envelopes used in the Zodiac letters, and the SFPD compared the partial DNA to the DNA of Arthur Allen Lee and Don Chaney. And neither test was a match, so Allen and Chaney were excluded as the contributors of the DNA.
Which is also not to say, though, that someone else could have licked those.
Yeah, yeah. So retired police handwriting expert Lloyd Cunningham, who worked on the Zodiac case for decades, added, "They gave me banana boxes full of Allen's handwriting, and none of his writing even came close to the Zodiac. Nor did the DNA extracted from the envelopes." Don Chaney died in 2009, leaving a legacy of tall tales, which helped to derail the Zodiac investigation for decades because of his testimonies, mm-hmm. and contributed to the popular myths regarding Arthur Lee Allen. Both Allen's brother and sister-in-law had known Don Chaney, and to this day, neither believes that his stories were true, and both believe that he had totally made them up as revenge for the molestation attempt. Mm-hmm. Alleged molestation attempt, but based on Allen's history.
Yeah.
He's a pedophile.
Yeah.
One of the oddest and most incriminating evidence in the case against Arthur Allen is that Allen reportedly told investigators that he had bloody knives on his car seat on the day of the Zodiac stabbing at Lake Berryessa. Now, the police never confirmed this claim, but Allen himself said that he had used the knives to kill chickens that he ate during a camping trip that weekend. Mm-hmm. In October 1969, he told a Vallejo detective that he had gone to Salt Point to scuba dive, and in 1971, he told the same story and then offered the explanation about the knives. In his book, Robert Graysmith claimed that Allen's sister-in-law had actually seen the knives in Allen's car that day, and the police reports and the statements of the sister-in-law proved that she had never seen knives, nor did she claim to have ever seen them. Mm-hmm. So it's just a big old fucking clusterfuck. Allen's mention of the knives remains one of the most troubling aspects of his behavior during the investigation, but the possibility exists that he was telling the truth or that he was simply fucking with them.
We will never know.
We will never know. Ross Sullivan was suspected in the 1966 murder of Sherry Jo Bates, and while that case remains unsolved, it is believed by some investigators that Bates was Zodiac's first victim. Mm-hmm. Both San Francisco Chronicle reporter Paul Avery and Detective Dave Tosche investigated the killing in connection to the Zodiac. Next up, we have Jack Terrence. In 2007, Dennis Kaufman claimed that his stepfather, Jack Terrence, was the Zodiac killer. Though Terrence died in 2006, Kaufman produced several pieces of evidence that he believed incriminated his stepfather in the murders. Terrence resembled the police sketch, matching the descriptions, having the crew cut, the glasses, and since it's heavily speculated that Zodiac had a military background, the physical description matched several suspects who were confirmed to have spent time in the military, so, you know. Mm-hmm. The man described by Brian Hartnell, survivor of the 1969 Lake Berryessa attack, wore military boots similar to what Terrence would have worn during his years in the Navy and Air Force. Kaufman turned over a bloody knife, film rolls, handwriting samples, and a hood that matched the description. Both the DNA and handwriting analysis were inconclusive. Dennis Kaufman's half-brother Charles Terrence also agrees that his father was the Zodiac killer. Charles said that his dad was acting like he was shooting people all the while saying, "Ha ha, Zodiac." The husband of Jack Terrence's daughter says that he recalled Terrence saying, "If you knew who I was, you wouldn't like me very much." Ugh. And another relative who remains unnamed said that Terrence said, "I've been drunk and in fights. I've stabbed so many people I've lost count." And a neighbor said that Terrence told them, "You ain't been hunting until you hunt people." Kaufman's claim, however, is discredited by many due to the lack of evidence. Mm-hmm. Next, we have Earl Van Best Jr. Yeah. Gary Stewart published a 2014 true crime book, The Most Dangerous Animal of All, in an effort to name his biological father, Earl Van Best Jr., as the Zodiac Killer. Authorities and researchers debunk Stewart's case against his father, citing lack of direct evidence, but there seems to be no doubting one thing. Earl Van Best Jr. was not a nice person. Van Best made San Francisco news in the early 60s when, at age 28, he began a predatory relationship with a 14-year-old girl. Shortly after meeting Judy Chandler at an ice cream parlor, he married her. She was pregnant with their son, Gary, at age 15. By that time, Van Best had been imprisoned for statutory rape, saying, "I can't help the difference in our ages. I love Judy and she loves me. It was love at first sight. I can't help the difference in our ages." Oh, where we go? So Van Best also allegedly was an abusive father, eventually abandoning his one-month-old son in Louisiana. Stewart was adopted and did not learn about his biological parents until 2002 when he was contacted by Judy. Van Best, who would go on to be charged with DUIs, fraud, rape, pedophilia, and other crimes, died in 1984 in Mexico. And although he sounds like a real piece of shit, this does not necessarily Zodiac make. Next, we have Rick Marshall. Richard Rick Marshall was a radio and movie theater worker who became a person of interest due to some common interests with the Zodiac and his proximity to several of the attacks, including Paul Stein and Donna Lass. Marshall's love for the 1907 short film The Red Phantom piqued the interest of investigators, as one of the letters thought to be from the Zodiac was signed The Red Phantom. In 1969, Marshall reportedly lived in a basement apartment on Scott Street in San Francisco, several miles from the scene of Zodiac's last known murder. In one letter, the Zodiac mentioned his basement. Marshall was also said to have been in the Napa area at the time of the stabbing at Lake Berryessa. Marshall was ambidextrous, and he also owned a Royal typewriter similar to the one to type the confession letter in the Riverside case. Marshall's prints were taken but did not match any of the prints believed to belong to the Zodiac. Richard Marshall shared his thoughts during a 1989 television interview. He said, "Obviously, if they had been more forthcoming, I would have understood why they were investigating me." He acknowledged that he and the Zodiac seemed to share similar characteristics and interests. He said, "My innocence notwithstanding, the details do fit." Hmm. Next, we have Lawrence Kane. Larry Kane was named as a Zodiac suspect by police officer Harvey Hines. He was the primary subject of investigator Hines' reports, who suspected Kane due to his tendency to create aliases and to alter his appearance. Hines believed that Kane knew the victim, Darlene Farron, after her sisters identified him as someone who scared Darlene. Kane had always been closely linked with the disappearances. Nope. Yes. Yep. Kane had also been closely linked with the disappearance of Donna Lass, the nurse who was last seen at her nurse's station at the Sahara Tahoe Hotel on September 6, 1970. Officer Hines became convinced of his guilt with respect to Zodiac murders and noted a comparison between the Bay Area letters and Lawrence Kane's handwriting, as well as a whole host of circumstantial evidence he had compiled over the years. Hines also believed that Kane was instrumental in the alleged abduction of Kathleen Johns, who had her car disabled by an unknown assailant on March 22nd, 1970. So Z already talked about that. God damn it. West of Modesto, Highway 132, driven around the outskirts of Tracy. So in Robert Graysmith's book, she said, "I couldn't handle it anymore, so I decided next time he came to one of those Hollywood stops, you know, not a complete stop, that he made a different stop signs, I was going to jump out," which she did. She later identified her attacker as the same man portrayed in a composite sketch from the Presidio Heights murder of Paul Stein on October 11th, 1969, which was hanging on the wall of the police station in Patterson. In 1992, according to Harvey Hines, Kathleen Johns claimed her assailant that night was none other than Lawrence Kane, and she picked his photo out of a six-person lineup. The problem with this identification was that Kathleen Johns described her abductor in 1970 as a, around 30 years of age. Lawrence Kane was 45 in 1970, but that, I guess, you know, really doesn't mean much.
Yeah,
I mean,
age, nobody...
Nobody knows,
nobody
right?
should really go off of that anymore, right. because it's so hard to tell how old someone is without asking.
Yeah.
So, you're like, I don't know, but... And that's why, I like, when I see... I'm doing research and see, like, suspect descriptions, like, between 26 and 50. I'm like...
Right?
Yeah.
So...
It's fair.
Yeah. Pam Huckabee... who was the sister of Darlene Farren, stated that Lawrence Kane had been trailing her sister in the run-up to the night of her murder. 5 days after the attack on Michael Mageau and Darlene Farren, Kane would trade in his vehicle for a 1969 Ambassador. Interesting.
Okay.
Before all the Zodiac killings, Larry Kane suffered a brain injury to his left frontal lobe in 1962 after a serious car accident.
Uh-oh.
Doctors diagnosed that he had developed an inability to control his urges for self-gratification, and he was arrested several times as a peeping Tom.
Poor impulse control, like a spider, a toddler, and or Nick.
Yes, absolutely. And or Nick. In the preceding months to the first confirmed Zodiac attack on Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so he was arrested several times in the months before that first attack on Betty Lou and David Faraday. 3 years after his brain injury in 1965, his prognosis in terms of rehabilitation was not good, and Kane was left with facial paralysis on one side of his face.
Uh-oh.
He would have a rudimentary knowledge of coding after his stint in the U.S. Naval Reserves in 1943. So along with the Modesto abduction of Kathleen Johns and the Donna Lass disappearance at South Lake Tahoe, did Larry Kane have the means... and the opportunity to commit the 5 murders at 4 locations attributed to the Zodiac Killer? I'd say yes.
Mm.
All very compelling, but the available evidence and official documents indicated that the FBI had compared Larry Kane's prints to suspected Zodiac prints in 1991, and they did determine that his prints did not match any of the Zodiac's prints on any of the Zodiac cases. Next, we have Richard Gajkowski. So, Gajkowski didn't become a Zodiac suspect until 1986, after a former co-worker called in a tip that he could be a suspect. Richard served a stint in the Army during the 1950s, and it was known that he was trained as a medic. Now, that's notable because medics were trained to tear the clothing off of a bleeding victim to use as bandages if they didn't have access to the proper equipment. Undershirt first, then shirt, then pants if necessary. That's the order of cleanliness and with blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Zodiac did tear off Paul Stein's shirt tail.
Mm-hmm.
Eventual Zodiac victim Darlene Farren got married on January 1st, 1966 and moved to Albany, New York. Gajkowski, oddly enough, did too. He moved cross-country from Martinez, which is near Vallejo. And Farron's husband worked at the Albany Times Union newspaper.
Hmm.
Gajkowski worked in the same building at the rival Knickerbocker News.
Hmm.
In August 1973, 4 years after Farron was killed by the Zodiac, the Times Union received a letter from someone claiming to be the Zodiac. When solved, the cipher that was included with the letter made reference to the Albany Medical Center, like you said earlier. In 1969 through 1971, Gajkowski was a member of an anti-police, pro-violence, counterculture newspaper and commune in San Francisco called Good Times. And as early as January 1969, the Good Times newspaper was running violent works of fiction that were nearly a blueprint for Zodiac's future crimes.
Hmm.
Wednesday was production day for the weekly Good Times newspaper when the staffers working... They'd work from early in the morning till very late at night to prepare the next issue. And between Zodiac's debut in July 1969 until the Good Times folded in 1973, the Zodiac mailed 15 letters. However, he never mailed a letter on a Wednesday.
Huh.
Although he did literally every other day of the week. Paul Stein was killed on San Francisco's Washington Street. And there was one Gajkowski listed in a city directory at that time, Richard's cousin, and she lived on Washington Street.
Hmm.
Her birthday was October 11th, which was the very day that Paul Stein was murdered by the Zodiac. And Carol, Paul Stein's sister, recognized Gajkowski as having attended Paul Stein's funeral. Which is weird as fuck.
That is random.
Why was he there?
Yeah.
Didn't know him.
Yeah, it's real fucking weird.
Okay, so on March 13th, 1971, the Zodiac sent a letter to the LA Times shortly after Gajkowski was involuntarily committed to the good old Napa State Hospital.
Hmm.
After just, in quotations, going berserk. He was then diagnosed with a mental illness and began treatment at Mount Zion Hospital in San Francisco. The Zodiac didn't write again for almost 3 years, and when the Zodiac reemerged in 1974 with letters referring to recent movie releases, Gajkowski was working at a theater in the Mission District of San Francisco. Hmm. Nancy Slover, the police dispatcher who spoke with Zodiac on July 1969, identified Gajkowski's voice as being the same as the Zodiac's. Now, he also, in my opinion, looks a fuck ton like the police sketch as well. However, by the time he became a Zodiac suspect more than 20 years later, all the records of his fingerprints were gone out of the system, making comparison to Zodiac's impossible without either Gajkowski's consent or a court order.
Hmm.
He, however, died of cancer in San Francisco on April 30th, 2004.
Huh.
Right? So, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures now.
Yeah. So, next up we have Dr. George Hodel.
Fart noises.
Yeah. So, I'm just going to say yes. No.
No.
Just no.
Just no.
No. He was not the Zodiac.
The
period.
End.
I fully believe he was a killer, which I've made very fucking clear.
We're very clear on that.
But not on this case. George Hodel was 62 at the time of Zodiac's last known murder, and even the oldest estimate of the suspect's age ranged somewhere between 35 and 45.
Yeah, and also, George Hodel did not look like that.
No, no. The witnesses who observed the killer on the night of October 11th, 1969 in San Francisco provided a description which cannot match Hodel by any stretch of the fucking imagination. Mm-hmm. Throughout most of his life, George Hodel had a dark mustache.
Yeah.
None of the witnesses stated that the killer wore a mustache. Steve Hodel, his son, speculates that his father may have shaved off the mustache at various times, but there's no evidence that he did.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And it's like we've seen George Hodel's handwriting.
Yeah.
We know his voice is not monotonous.
Yeah, and he also couldn't regress his age by 2 decades.
Also, no. And just the way that these letters were written, like, surely he could have misspelled things on purpose. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the letters in their entirety and read them through, you're like, whoever did this was not doing that on purpose. It's because that's just how...
Right.
They're not, like, making an attempt to try and trick somebody by misspelling paradise. They just probably were not school educated.
Right.
Very well. Right.
So, that's that.
And also, George Hodel was a doctor. So.
Yeah. So, boom. Done.
And
out.
Yeah, no.
Just not even.
I also feel like the Zodiac killings compared to Black Dahlia... Mm-hmm. It's just a completely different kind of horror.
Yeah.
Like, George Hodel, he definitely did that. Like,
I believe it 100%.
And it was a very, and we talked about it when we talked about Elizabeth Short, it was like a very scary and sick kind of art that he did. These were not.
No.
I feel like whoever did it probably did not plan as far ahead as Hodel did. Like, he didn't have that
vision.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Like, with Paul Stein, it probably could have just been he got the impulse and just decided
Boom,
to
done.
Kill him.
Mm-hmm. Next up was Ted Kaczynski. AKA the fucking Unabomber.
That one has also been, that's just like hilarious.
Also, no.
Definitely Kaczynski, not.
Yeah, Kaczynski left his job at Berkeley shortly after the Zodiac killed two victims in Benicia. At the time of the murders, he somewhat resembled the composite sketch of Zodiac.
Again, though, during the
his
time.
His handwriting was similar. Yeah, he even used his own complex coded methods to write a secret diary of his criminal life. Fine. But the career of the Unabomber began shortly after Zodiac disappeared. Mm-hmm. Authorities willing to investigate any possibility investigated this compared Kaczynski's fingerprints with those belonging to Zodiac. They didn't match.
Yeah.
The end.
And it's also like, okay, well, I can see trying to make the connection there because, you know, uh-huh. Unabomber in the name, Zodiac threatened a few times uh-huh. to make and detonate bombs. So it's grasping at straws, though. Uh-huh. Also, it kind of reminds me of, like, Jeffrey Dahmer, where they're like, well, he definitely looked like the guy. I'm like, okay, but it was 1969. A lot of guys look like that.
100%. And finally, we have Edward Wayne Edwards.
Oh, fucking Ed Edwards.
Edwards was indeed a killer.
Oh, yeah.
Convicted of five murders that took place between 1977 and 1996. His story is very interesting to be covered at a different time.
Yes.
But his story became the obsession of a retired Montana cold case detective named John A. Cameron. But here's the problem I have with his theory. Cameron also lists Ed Edwards as killing Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, mm-hmm. Marilyn Reese Shepard, who is the wife of Dr. Sam Shepard. Her death inspired the movie The Fugitive, released in 2004. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Hoffa.
Okay.
Martha Moxley, who was a Connecticut teenager whose murder case remained open until 02. Kennedy cousin Michael Skakel was convicted of killing her. Adam Walsh.
Oh.
The West Memphis Three.
Just all those big name unsolved ones.
JonBenet Ramsey.
That one I've heard about.
Chandra Levy.
Okay.
Lacey Peterson. Teresa Halbach, who if you've ever watched Making a Murderer. So he has Edwards as also killing all of these people. So there's that. Cameron's theories, to say the least, have proven controversial and absolutely fucking none have resulted in any new legal actions.
Yeah.
Also, so the answer is no.
Don't we know who killed some of those people now? Like Chandra Levy, don't we know who killed her?
Yeah.
And Teresa Halbach, still no, but yeah. We got a pretty good idea that it was not Edward Wayne Edwards.
Yeah.
JonBenet, no.
Right. And there is also a theory that the reason Zodiac stopped is because he moved to Italy.
Oh.
And became the Monster of Florence.
Oh.
So.
Okay. That is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Which we have, I've covered
you
that story.
Covered that and story. Il Mostro di Firenze.
Yep. And the MO is real fucking similar.
Yeah. From what I remember.
So those are all of our suspects.
Also, the suspect I was talking about earlier that was identified by Mike Migeau and Brian Hartnell was Arthur
Lee Allen. Yep. He is the number one, and for good reason.
Yeah. It's as much as I get it, I'm mm-hmm. also like, no. But mm-hmm. it's just, there's so much.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, okay. I could see a ton of these suspects having done it. But also on the same hand, I can see them not having done it.
Gajkowski's kind of my favorite, to be honest.
He's a good one.
He's a contender.
He's definitely up there, for sure.
He's a contender.
I like, this giant push for it to be Arthur Lee Allen, I feel was like they just wanted it solved. They just wanted to pin it on somebody. I feel like that's a lot.
And
of
he was
the case.
Skeevy enough.
Yeah. And they're like, well, this guy's already a piece of shit.
Is he capable of? Sure. I think he was.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't necessarily think it was him, though.
I don't know either. I lean more towards not. Well, and then, thinking that they really just wanted a suspect.
Yeah.
But also then you've got two people positively identifying him in photos mm-hmm. where you're like, okay, well, that's weird. And it's a quote from the movie, but let me pull it up because it was really good. Whether he actually said it or not, I don't know. But I was reading about Mike Migeaux not being the most gracious interviewee when they were talking to him about it. But also, I'm like, I don't fucking blame him.
Well, and then Lawrence Kane. I mean, she picked him out of a 6-person lineup.
Mm-hmm.
That's the guy that kidnapped me and my daughter.
Yeah.
You know?
And this is what he said.
And he had been stalking Darlene Farren. Her sister said, yes, that's the guy that was stalking my sister.
But also, what if they weren't the same person?
What if they weren't?
And just some maniac.
And that's fair.
Some maniac taking credit for it.
And Lawrence Kane was known to change his appearance. So, and go by aliases, and he would completely change his appearance. Mm-hmm. So it could stand to reason that he was the man seen the day at Lake Berryessa mm-hmm. and the man seen that killed Paul Stein.
Entirely possible.
They could be the same fucking person, just two totally different looks.
Well, it was like fucking D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Some people described him as thin, and then other times he was described as heavier set, which...
It's all subjective, right? I mean...
But also, he's the same person.
Yep.
He just fluctuated in weight.
Yeah. Shit happens.
A haircut can totally change someone's appearance. Working out. And that's just unintentional, like relatively unintentional, but like somebody can go out and completely change what they're doing.
Well, and here's the thing. I think that Zodiac was military. Mm-hmm. I think that he definitely had... He couldn't spell for shit, but
no.
Maybe that's just how, I mean, he had to have some level of intelligence because we have ciphers that still are unfucking solved.
Well, that's like some people are brilliant
at
math.
Ted Kaczynski.
Brilliant at math and stuff like that, but English, not their thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's entirely possible. I knew kids in high school that were just absolutely amazing at math, and then I had English with them. I'm like, what 4-year-old was given your pencil?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening here? They're like, I hate writing. I hate reading. I'm like, okay.
Fair.
Oh, but this was the quote from the movie I was thinking mm-hmm. of. Whether or not it actually happened, I don't know. I couldn't find a transcript of Mike Migeaux's interview from 1991, and it was with that guy, Bauert.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, the last time I saw this face was July 4th, 1969. I'm very sure that's the man who shot me mm-hmm. from the movie. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, even if it didn't happen that way, it's a fucking chilling ending to the movie.
Yeah.
Like, the interview really happened. I just don't know if that's actually what he said.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, holy shit. No idea. It's like how I feel about JonBenet. I just don't fucking know. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. No. No. I know.
Will we ever know?
No,
probably not.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I mean, it'd be really fucking cool.
Yeah.
Again, great reminder to go opt the fuck in.
Opt the fuck in.
Because they do have DNA.
Yeah.
From presumably the Zodiac killer.
Yeah.
So...
Well, and, you know, like, I'm going through all my pages here. And there's so fucking many of them. You know, I was going to wrap mine up with sort of the same thing you wrapped yours up with. Mm-hmm. You know, as of 2004, the SFPD marked the case inactive, citing caseload pressure and resource demands, which effectively closed the case.
Too much time and money. And
however,
resources.
They reopened their case sometime before March 07.
Mm-hmm.
The case is still open in Napa County and in Riverside.
Yep.
In May 2018, the Vallejo Police Department announced their intention to attempt to collect Zodiac's DNA from the stamps. The analysis by a private lab was expected to check the DNA, like you said, against mm-hmm. GEDmatch. In May 2018, Vallejo Police Detective said that results were expected in several weeks. However, as of May 2021, results were reported.
Yep.
Which still means...
Nothing. There's nothing.
There's nothing.
They've found nothing.
They have found nothing.
That is my assumption.
Uh-huh.
They and either found nothing or they have not tested it yet.
Well, and, you know, but good old Gajkowski. I mean, yeah, he served some time, but by the time he was a suspect, his records and shit were gone.
Which is so weird. Why?
Why was he at Paul Stein's funeral?
Also, why?
And the 911 operator was like, that's the man's voice. You know, and I would assume as someone who listens to voices all day long over the phone, you kind of can, I'm sure some do sound alike, you know, it's got to be difficult. I know we sound alike.
We do. It's weird.
But
I also, but I feel like when you get a call like that, that will stick out in your mind.
Leaves
anyway.
A mark.
Whether it's because you recognize the voice or not, it's just what they're saying.
Right.
But when you hear it again, it'll trigger that memory. And you're like, oh, that's the fucking guy.
Exactly.
That's fucking it.
Yeah. I kind of like Gajkowski.
Yeah. He's definitely fucking
he's
up
a contender.
There. Mm-hmm. But you'd think that they would be able to find something to pin him to it. Conclusively.
Or he moved to motherfucking Italy.
Or he moved to motherfucking Italy.
Or he was still in the military the whole fucking time and got transferred to Italy.
Could have been. Definitely.
There's plenty. We got plenty. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Military bases over there.
Mm-hmm.
Presidio.
Mm-hmm. Very.
The nurse.
Yep.
Worked at the hospital near the Presidio. So
she moved and then disappeared.
Yeah. The military boots you can get anywhere at any sort of, you know, military supply. It's not.
Now.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could then. I don't know. I don't know if they were like they are now where you can go to like Andy and Bax and whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like they may have been at the time just something like on a base.
Possible.
Like the commissary or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's the base there at the Presidio in San Francisco. There's Angel Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there. So, and the connection, I just find it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The Texarkana.
Yeah, I don't think that was Zodiac. I do think that whoever was the Zodiac was heavily
influenced
by the story. Because that was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. So it would have been.
And 1945, like I said, yeah, there's 23 years difference, but that could have made an impact. He could have been a young teen. He could have been a man in his early 20s.
Could have been. Or he could have been related to the person.
Yeah.
Could have known them.
Because here's the thing, you know, Zodiac was between, you know, 25 and 45. So 23 years earlier, he could have very easily been in his early 20s. Late teens, early 20s.
Could have been, unless he was on the younger end, truly, when the Zodiac killings started.
And, yeah.
He would have been, I don't know.
Maybe he's just one of those people that looks older. Who knows?
Could have
but
been.
I just find it very interesting. The Lovers Lane killers.
Mm-hmm.
Because those that do it, the Monster of Florence.
Yeah. I feel like it's
Zodiac.
It's easy because, you know, it's secluded, but it's not like
super shooting fish
out of
in a barrel.
Yeah. It's just
literally.
Like, well, here we go. This is going to be relatively easy for me to get away with this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, the Lake Berryessa one, though, that was just like. Wow.
Bold.
Yeah.
And terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Ugh, just.
And Arthur Lee Allen was 100% a pedophile and a misogynist. There's no.
Oh, there's no
I mean,
doubt
there's
about
no
that.
Doubting that.
He was absolutely a piece of shit.
And I just think that he was a very, very easy target.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again,
a very easy target.
And, yeah. And like I said, it's because they just wanted it. They wanted to know so bad.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like putting all those eggs in the basket.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's got to be this guy.
Yeah.
It's
then
gotta be.
He just disappeared. You know, and I get it. You know, cops have that gut instinct, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the job, or it's either why you went into the job, detectives. They have to go with their gut. And, you know, Arthur Lee Allen, you know, Tashi was like, that's him. I know it's him. It's got to be him. I just know it. But just can't pin it on him.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was because, I mean, but Jesus fucking Christ, How many warrants were served to his house in 20 years and after his death, and still there's fucking nothing other than him being a big fat fucking pedophile?
Mm-hmm.
You would think that there would be something.
You would think. But he also didn't seem like the type of murderer that would have kept trophies. I think the attention...
Yeah, Zodiac.
Was enough.
Yeah, that was exactly it. Zodiac loved the attention.
The attention. And it was definitely a game.
I was just going to say, and he felt very powerful. He felt smarter than the police. Couldn't, like I said, couldn't spell for shit, but there's a level of intelligence there. He was playing chess, you know, with the police.
Exactly. And well, not even just the police, with everybody. Media, the police.
And he kept winning.
And unfortunately, he's still winning.
Yeah.
He's been winning since the 60s.
Yeah. So, I mean, is he alive?
Oh, he would be old.
Yeah.
But
right?
D'Angelo. He was caught in his 70s.
So, let's do some math. Let's bring out the calculator, because I can't math in my head. You know this.
It's only little math.
So, let's say... Okay, the first killing was in 1960.
Well, if we're counting Sherry Joe, it would be 66.
Okay, let's say he was...
20.
Sure.
He was born in 1946.
Okay, so...
My grandparents were born in 42 and 44, and they are still very much alive.
Yeah, he'd be 75.
Uh-huh. It's possible.
So let's say he was in the 35.
Okay.
Let's say he was 35 in 1966. Or no, in 19, because the Paul Stein, what year was that?
69?
Yeah. Okay. So if you are 45 in 1969.
Let's see.
Right?
That is the clock. That is not what I meant.
1969. Okay. So
1924.
Okay. So minus 1924. Oh, fuck, he'd be 97.
Entirely possible.
Entirely possible, but I truly think he's dead.
Probably.
I think Zodiac is dead.
Probably.
That's just my gut.
I want him to be alive, though.
So that he could be caught.
Yeah. I love when that happens.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still waiting for Carolyn Bryant to go to fucking jail.
Yeah, he could have been 30. He could have been 28. Mm-hmm. But if he was in the 45 range, he's definitely fucking dead.
Too close to 100.
Right.
I mean, below. Yeah. Bless her. We've still got some.
I know, but.
We've still got some, but more, the needle is definitely pointing more towards dead if he were that old.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think the description that was like, yeah, he's 45. I'm like, no, it just doesn't feel like
no,
it. Like,
I
definitely feel like he was probably born in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Around there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that sits right.
Yeah.
It feels right.
Yeah. No, I get it.
But yeah, I don't think he was that old when he started it.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be fucking cool to figure it out though.
Yeah, I don't know. It's no. I don't I just like Jack, you know.
Yeah.
Zodiac will never be solved.
Also, like, why haven't that trio would nerds worked on more of the ciphers if they
and
weren't.
Where's the OG ones?
Right, where'd
right?
they go?
Where'd they go? Do more.
Right? I'm like, you guys did that one real fucking fat, like days.
Yeah, let's work on these, guys.
And I think the cipher is pretty fucking similar. It's just I don't know how they couldn't have.
Is Ted Kaczynski still alive?
I don't know. I want to say yes, but I don't know.
Hand them over to him. Let him fucking read them.
Yeah.
Let me see.
But also, could we trust him to do it?
Maybe.
Because he's Ted Kaczynski. To be fair.
Yeah, I'm Googling right now to see if he's...
I don't know.
Oh, he's alive, girl.
Okay.
Yeah, he's 79.
Oh, yeah.
See what Ted says.
There's a letter we could write.
Be like, see what Ted says.
Be like, hey, Theodore, how you doing, buddy? You got an idea, sir. Would you like to take a crack at the Zodiac ciphers if nobody's asked in all these years? Why haven't you done it.
They had to have asked him.
Have they, though? Do you really think that they would have?
For having... He was an actual suspect.
I know, but so... do you think that would have crossed their... Like, from... It's easy to say from the outside. Of course they had to. But... would they have?
I don't know.
I don't know if that would have been their top priority.
Hmm. Well, it's kind of mine now.
Yeah. Dearest Theodore.
Did we just come up with a new theory? Like,
maybe.
Not even a theory, but a new plan. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's so many words have come out of my mouth in the last 2 hours that I'm just fumbling on them now.
It's fine. I mean, I read so many words.
Did I do my sources?
No.
Okay. Every fucking wiki.
All of them.
Imaginable.
Yes.
sfgate.com, KT Dowd. zodiackiller.fandom.com. zodiackillerfacts.com. zodiaccyphers.com.
Yep.
zodiackiller.com. Mm-hmm. screenrant.com, Elizabeth Lerman. And investigationdiscovery.com, Mike McPadden.
Okay.
So that is the clusterfuck that is the Zodiac.
Fucking Zodiac killer.
Yeah, he is kind of exhausting. There's so many rabbit holes and veins and theories.
It's always the ones that have the theories that mm-hmm. feel like an eternity in hell.
Yeah.
Trying to research, because it's a lot of it is just you have to weed through all of the conjecture.
I was just going to say, exactly.
Yeah. And it's not like the case itself isn't interesting, because it fucking is.
It really is. But you've got at least 50 Zodiac experts who have all fucking written books, who all have blogs and websites and fucking theories.
Yeah. And it's like 50 plus years worth of theories.
Right.
That, I mean, anybody... Especially now that the internet is a thing. But just anybody can say anything.
Yep.
And then just one random post sprouts eight other random, like a fucking hydra.
Yeah, so it's real hard, just like with H.H. Holmes, it was very hard to sift through.
Yeah.
Which is why I stuck to very specific sites and I kind of stayed there.
Same.
Otherwise, I mean, I'd still be fucking writing.
Same.
So, ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time.
So,
ain't nobody got time.
Fucking time. So, there's that
fucking guy.
That fucking guy. Well, I've got to pee.
Please do.
You've got to figure out your fucking oil situation.
Ugh. I don't want to. I gotta.
Girl, I went and got my oil change yesterday, and they told me it was bone dry.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It was bad. I went over.
Yeah, well, see, I'm really good about getting my oil changed, and I still, like, I just did it, so I don't know what's happening.
Maybe they left, like, something off, and you're just leaking fucking oil everywhere.
I haven't seen any. That's the thing.
That's weird. All right,
I haven't seen any in my driveway, so I don't fucking know.
All right, y'all. Well, we done it. So I'm not going to tell you to rate, review, and subscribe, because you're here.
Yeah.
You're here. You've already done the Patreon thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You've already done it. Well, all right, y'all. So we're going to attempt to turn this thing off ourselves. We've been left to our own devices.
Oh, God. We're so far away.
I have T-Rex arms.
Right? Mine aren't much longer.
All right. We've been left to our own devices because Randall doesn't love us anymore.
Nope.
So till next time, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all.
And bye.
Bye. Mwah. All right, am I going to do it or are you going to do it?
You're closer.
I'm closer. All right.
Okay.
Wish me luck.
I believe in you.
Wish me luck, fam.
You got this. It's the button that looks like a stop button. Say goodbye. Bye.